Oh, that's right. He just said he's going to stay here for a few minutes. That's right, he is. We've got the one and only Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line with us this morning. How you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Ann. Great for having me on today. Thanks so much. It's a great day to be in South Carolina in the 3rd District.
Absolutely. I understand you've got a whole tour planned here, but we'll let you maybe talk about that a little later. And I know you got your Faith and Freedom barbecue. We're going to talk about that before you get off the line. But I actually have a few questions for you. So,
okay.
Iraq. I wanted to know what you're on Homeland Security. You're into this and everything. What is your feeling about what is happening in Iraq? I know we have, of course, done some food drops, and now we've got some military airstrikes. Where do you think we're going with this, Jeff?
Well, I've been concerned about not just Iraq, but Iraq and Syria and what's going on in that region for a while, mainly because of the foreign fighters from other countries that are going into Syria and now going into Iraq, joining up with ISIS. And getting battle-hardened, possibly radicalized, and then coming back. And if they, let's say they're Europeans, they're French, German, English, and they get back to their home country, and nobody knows that they've gone to Syria or Iraq, then if they're in a Schengen area, an ability to cross country boundaries over in Europe, the European Union, without any visa, and then possibly get on an airplane under the visa waiver program where those countries in Europe can actually come to the United States, folks from those countries can come to the United States without having to obtain a visa, then they can come here as long as they have valid travel documents, come to the United States, and if they've been radicalized, what do they come here for? So we call it foreign fighter flow, and I'm very, very concerned about that. And then we can focus on Iraq in general and the persecution of Christians. I'm glad to see that the administration recognized our historical relationship with the Kurds in Kurdistan. My understanding is that we didn't lose a single American life in that region of Iraq. And now we're seeing that the Iraqis are taking advantage of the prowess of the Kurds in going and attacking ISIS around the Mosul Dam. And you're seeing the Kurds, which have historically been almost enemies of the Iraqi government, and Maliki's government didn't want to involve the Kurds in the government. But now we see the Kurds actually taking care of business over there, so it's an interesting dynamic.
It is an interesting dynamic, but do you think that we're going to end up back in a war over there? Are we going to be? We already have some boots on the ground, I understand, but they're supposed to be on a observing. But do you think we could end up back in a war over there again?
Well, you know, I don't believe that limited airstrikes is going to take care of the issue of ISIS in Iraq. I think it's probably going to ultimately mean some sort of level of U.S. involvement beyond the 200 or so military advisors that are over there now. And, you know, we just can't do what we need to do with drone strikes or with airstrikes in general. And so we as Americans, and I've asked on Facebook and other places, you know, what is the U.S.'s role? We have war fatigue in this country because of Iraq and Afghanistan. So what is our role? What should we do, and would Americans accept some boots on the ground over there, so to speak, to use the phrase that's so so prevalent today, in order to protect the persecution of Christians?
And what have you found out, Jeff?
I'm finding out that most people are accepting of something when it comes to rescuing and keeping the persecution, the beheadings, the crucifixions of folks, not only just Christians, but folks that don't accept this version of Islam and won't bow down to that, and Christians aren't bowing down. They're not converting. They're maintaining their faith, and they're being persecuted because of it. And I think Americans, the Americans I've talked to, at least in the 3rd District of South Carolina, want to see the U.S. do more than what we're doing now.
So when you go, I understand the president was coming back to Washington, D.C. for 2 days from his trip up there to Martha's Vineyard, and supposedly he's going to be working on some of this with the airstrikes and everything. Do you expect to be notified of anything different coming down the pike?
Well, is this before he gets in his other round of golf today or after? You know, the president failed to go to the funeral service at Arlington on Thursday of Major General Greene, who was the first and highest-ranking military officer to die since 1970, and yet the president felt it was more important to play golf than it was to attend the military funeral for a high-ranking major general buried at Arlington. And so, look, I'm going to support the president's decision to use more force based on what I'm hearing in my district, unless otherwise. I anticipate having to cast a vote at some point in time, so I really want to hear from folks via Twitter, via Facebook, via a message through my website, either a political website at jeffduncan.com or through jeff.house.gov, my website there for my my office. I want to hear from folks on how they feel about this.
Absolutely. Well, it certainly has been something. And then, of course, in the media, of course, we're hearing that if we don't handle this from this point, are we going to end up with them on our homeland? On our homeland, ISIS is what I'm referring to.
Well, ISIS has already said they're coming to the United States and they want to fly that black Al-Qaeda or ISIS flag over the White House. We've got to be vigilant. We have to understand that we have a porous southern border. We don't know who is in our country, who's coming into our country, and what nefarious items or things they're bringing in with them. So I am all for border security. I'm concerned about what we see going on our southern border now with these unaccompanied children. And if the drug cartels can bring drugs, money, people, what makes us think they can't and won't bring nefarious items or people across our border as well?
Absolutely. Now, what about, speaking of immigration and across the border, what about all these children that have come across the border? Now, we're actually responsible, you know, that we're supposed to be educating them and this type of thing. I understand we had 350 come in over there at Charleston. What is the future with immigration?
You know, we passed an immigration bill dealing with the border situation before we left. The Senate had already recessed, and Harry Reid failed to bring the Senate back in to deal with the border situation and deal with the House bill. Even if they didn't like every facet of what we did in the House bill, they can change it. That's part of the legislative process. What Americans, at least Americans I represent, don't want to see is they don't want to see amnesty. They don't want to see us grant citizenship status to those children or other illegals that have come across into this country. So we need to be vigilant with regard to that. We need to push for, I thought, a very common sense border bill that we passed that said, look, we're going to allow the governor's call out the National Guard. We're going to provide for payment for that through funds that were unexpended funds from different sources, from not raising taxes, not additional spending. And we're also going to our car I'm in's got a little gasoline leak, and I'm sorry I'm distracted a little bit. So our bill also allowed CBP officers, Customs and Border Patrol, to actually get onto federal lands that they're currently off limits, and that's on National Forest Service land, that's on wilderness area and monument land that's along the border. They can't patrol now, so those are just corridors for the bad guys to bring people and drugs and other things.
But Jeff,
so we've got a good bill that does it actually does deportation hearings for the most recent arrivals. So there's nothing like stopping this issue than having mom and dad who just paid $5,000 or $6,000 have their children sent to Mexico see these kids return right away, and they go, wait a minute, what did we spend that money on? And so we can stop it through expeditious deportation hearings for the most recent arrivals.
Except, in the meantime, our school systems are supposed to be educating these kids. I mean, it's costing, I think in Florida they were talking about $2,000 per child, additional per child. We have kids that probably are going to get into the system. They don't show up for their deportation hearings, and it's kind of de facto as far as that they are becoming citizens one way or the other, aren't they, Jeff?
And you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the first day of school over here in Lawrence County where I'm from. My kids started their first day, and are they going to be faced, are the school districts going to be faced with these illegal children who have no English proficiency skills at all? And what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you, it means a drain on the limited resources that public education and even Medicaid currently have due to budget constraints, and now they're going to have to spend some of those resources to educate these children that are forced upon them, 350 children here in South Carolina. And so I want to see, and I think we will see, the states push back against the federal government for bringing these children in. And look, Rahm Emanuel in Chicago says he'll welcome them with open arms. I think we send them all up there.
Okay. All right. Well, next topic I want to ask you real quick before we talk about Faith and Freedom coming up on August 25th is, You know, we've seen legalization of marijuana in Colorado. It was a hot topic down here in South Carolina. What is your feeling about legalization of marijuana?
Well, I mean, that's a state issue, whether the states want to do that or not. And let me just preface this. I'm going to hit a cell hole up here, and I may break up, and I may drive behind you. I will call you right back. Bear with
me. All right. You want to call me back? Well, looks like we lost him. Maybe he'll call us right back. Hey, I am Ann Eller right here with you.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Well, looks like we got him back. He must have got through that hole there. Are you there, Jeff?
Yeah, and I knew that was coming on. Verizon must have had a tower hit by lightning if you're a Verizon worker right along 385 at 49. But anyway, we were talking about marijuana, and I think it's a state issue, and I think the jury's out on how Colorado and Washington State are going to handle all this, and I think we're going to, as a nation, we're going to watch and should watch closely the effects of marijuana use on those states, on employment, on crime rates, on just on apathy, and also on the influx of people that are just coming for the drug culture. So I'm not going to, I don't have an opportunity to really vote on those issues other than return it back to the states from the federal level, Ann.
Well, but the thing about it is, Jeff, is that tax-wise, it has become very lucrative for Colorado. They have been shocked at how much money they've already made on it. And kind of like alcohol was when they first started putting alcohol out there and we went through prohibition. And, of course, then the federal government decided it was a good thing and there's tax on that. So I guess my question to you on the federal level is the fact that won't marijuana be something that the federal government is eventually going to look at and say, tax dollars, we need to put this out there?
Well, you know, this is a federal issue at some level because it's still a federal crime. And even, you know, we cast some votes recently on amendments that would change some of the banking regulations and requirements for businesses doing business with, you know, if they're within the drug or marijuana culture, doing business at banks. And they were trying to allow some of that to go to regional banks. Well, here was my opinion on the vote that I cast, is that banking regulations apply across the nation, and there is a thing called a currency transaction report. If you deposit $10,000 in cash or more, then they're required to get a lot of information from you. That's to counter the money laundering. Well,
right.
The amendment that we voted on would have done away with that regulation within the banking community regard to currency transaction reports and would have made a gateway for money laundering to happen in Colorado and Washington State. So there is a federal role. There is a federal criminal element to this, and whether the Department of Justice, this one or the future one, will prosecute at the federal level is yet to be seen. That's why I say, you know, the jury's still out on how the effects of Colorado and Washington and other states that continue, and even the District of Columbia, that continue to legalize marijuana usage, on what impact it's going to have on the nation and what impact it's going to have on law enforcement. And so I think we just got to continue monitoring very, very closely.
Okay, because I know I found it very interesting that if you wanted to get a gun permit to carry, that in Colorado, if you say that you use marijuana, which is legal there, you are in violation of the federal regulations, and vice versa, if you say that you don't and you do, then you are you have perjured yourself.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's a lot of problems with regard to how federal law is implemented and how state law is implemented and where they conflict.
Exactly. All right.
But, I'll go back. I'm a states' rights guy, and so I believe that the states do have the ability to do this. And I think you'll see employers start to leave Colorado because of the workforce and issues that they face there. And so that's why I say I think the jury's out on whether this will be an ongoing thing in states like Colorado when they start seeing employers leave the state and employment drop.
Actually, Jeff, agricultural will just become a bigger employer in the state of Colorado.
Yeah, I like to ski, and I haven't skied in a number of years, but when I've skied, I've been in Colorado skiing. I don't know that I want to get on the ski slopes with a with a bunch of folks that have been smoking marijuana or actually smoking it on the lift on the way up the hill. So that's going to change some of my travel patterns possibly in the future, Ann.
Absolutely. One more question, then we'll talk about faith and freedom if you have a second. Offshore drilling, particularly off the coast of South Carolina, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm an advocate for that, and we've continued to try to get legislation and amendments that attach to other bills to sort of include the Mid-Atlantic and South Atlantic area in the next five-year plan for the nation on where we're going to do exploration and production. I've even got Secretary Jewell, Secretary of Interior, on the record that she's not abject to opening up those areas. So we're going to continue working hard. There's been a lot of effort on the part of industry to poll the nation to find out how they feel about it. And we're moving forward, and we'll continue to support more seismic activity happening off the coast so we can find out what sort of resources might be recoverable there. That's using 21st century technology of 3D and 4D seismic. And it pains me to say this as a Clemson graduate, but the University of South Carolina and Dr. James Knapp and his students are preparing for future seismic work. He's training the new minds, and he's been a leader with regard to seismic and seismic activity and how to read that future 3D and 4D seismic graph to find out what sort of resources are recoverable. So I give him a shout-out on what they're doing down at the University of South Carolina on this issue as well.
Absolutely. And by the way, if you get a chance, you need to go down to the South Carolina State Museum and see the new planetarium, the observatory. It is so awesome, and we're the only state in the union to have what we have right here in South Carolina.
Right. And I will say this on offshore drilling. Most people just think about the jobs that would be created being the guys in the hard hats and the oily uniforms out there turning the drill on the drilling platform. But really the impact and the economic jobs that are created, economic impact, are onshore to support that offshore industry. And these are supply vessels. These are, you know, HVAC repairmen, these are food services, these are transportation, these are pipe welders and fitters and widget makers and everything that supports the offshore industry. And those people are going to their local restaurants and eating and tipping the waitresses and tithing at their local churches and sponsoring ball clubs and joining the United Way and the Chamber. And there's just a tremendous trickle-down effect from the jobs that will be created to support that industry.
Absolutely, but aren't there a lot of people out there that don't want to see anything off that coast when they're looking out over the over the vista over there, over the ocean?
Well, and they're concerned about tourism being our number one industry. Absolutely it is, but where we believe these resources to be are over the horizon. We do know that, you know, the state should have some control over, you know, a certain buffer zone. But one thing I will say from an environmental impact position, we believe there's natural gas off our coast. But we also understand that the geology of our offshore area, the outer continental shelf, is very relatively shallow water from zero standing on the beach out to where these resources are expected to be. The water gets to be about 120 feet deep. Well, what does that mean? Compare it to 5,600 feet, and that was Deepwater Horizon, the accident that happened. Man can't go to 5,600 feet. They were using robotics to try to handle capping that gusher. In South Carolina, should something, and Lord hope that it doesn't happen, but let's say we find oil and we do have an accident out there, we can jump in the water with a diving suit on, take the wrenches, the blow torches, everything we need to take care of it hands-on, because man can dive down to 120 feet deep and deal with it, not with robotics and a PlayStation controller from the surface trying to get a robot to do it, but actually do it with their own hands and cap that gusher or cap whatever problem we may have right away. So the impacts on the environment would be minimal in that issue, in that aspect.
Okay. And, okay, so I would guess that you are in favor of this.
I'm sorry?
I guess I would say you are in favor of offshore drilling.
I am absolutely an advocate for it, pushing for it, because I want to see South Carolina benefit not only from the jobs, but also from the revenue sharing that come back to the state that possibly the General Assembly could direct to roads and bridges and our infrastructure needs. And so there are a lot of positives for allowing this to happen. And I can tell you where it's going to happen if we don't drill off the coast of our nation. It's going to happen off the coast of Brazil. It's going to happen off the coast of Africa. It's going to happen off the coast of Israel and Turkey and Cyprus. It's going to happen in Indonesia and off the coast of Vietnam and China. It's going to happen everywhere in the world. But we need to truly be energy independent. We can utilize the resources that God gave us here in this country, and that's offshore and onshore.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, coming up on August 25th, you have your big Faith and Freedom event. I know you want to tell us a little bit about who's going to be there and what's all happening.
Absolutely. 1 week from today, on 6:30 in the evening at the Anderson Civic Center on August 25th, we've got our fourth annual Faith and Freedom Barbecue. Got some special guests coming, including Senator Marco Rubio. And whether he's going to be a presidential contender or not, he is on the national stage as a United States Senator. Have an opportunity for folks to come out and interact with Marco, Senator Rubio, have a chance to hear him speak, hear his vision for going forward. We're also going to have Governor Haley there as a special guest, and a number of other statewide office holders and candidates. I'm going to speak. We're going to have a very patriotic theme, and that evening we're also honoring veterans. And so if you're a veteran and you'd like to come, we found a way to let you come at no cost to you. I'd love to have you. I'd love to say thank you and honor you as a veteran. And so you can contact us as a veteran. We need you to RSVP, and you can do that through our website, jeffduncan.com, J-E-F-F-D-U-N-C-A-N.com, or anybody that wants a ticket, $25 a person, $40 a couple, and you can get those through jeffduncan.com, or you can contact us by email at jeff@jeffduncan.com. For a phone number, if you'd like to go ahead and pay or RSVP and pay at the event, you can call Drea, and we can get you that number through an email. So it's going to be a wonderful patriotic evening with patriotic music, great speakers like Senator Marco Rubio, and I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Absolutely. That number to call, 803-413-5951. That's 803-413-5951. Well, Congressman Jeff Duncan, it's been a long time since we've had you on the radio. It's nice to talk to you.
Well, it's an honor to be on, and I want to come back to the Sharp Facets studio there sometime and sit down with you and look you in the eye, and let's have a long, in-depth conversation about a lot of issues that are facing our country. But I want to ask folks to follow me on Facebook or Twitter, and just you can research me. We provide a lot of information, and so you don't have to wait for me to come back and do a town hall. We're actually doing town halls multiple times during the day, explaining votes, issues of the day, responding to feedback and comments, and it's a great way to keep in touch and keep informed. So friend me on Facebook. We have a personal page, a political page, and a official page. You can find us there, and I'd love to have you on Facebook.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for calling us, Jeff.
Absolutely, Ann. Love you. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.